Welcome to Lord Jonlander, the Outlander podcast for Lord Jon fans, where we talk about all things Outlander, but especially about Jaime and his Sassenach. And sometimes we'll talk about Claire, too. We may not be the Outlander podcast you wanted, but we will be the Outlander podcast you didn't know you needed. This is your one and only warning that this is not a spoiler-free zone. We can and we will spoil anything and everything about Outlander, from the books and the show, and definitely from Season 7. We'll probably make some stuff up while we're at it. If you make it through the episode in one piece, we'd love to hear from you. You can contact us on Twitter and Tumblr at Lord Jonlander, or on our website at lordjonlander.wordpress.com, where you'll also find our archived episodes, teasers, fig recs, and more. Hello, welcome back to Lord Jonlander. We are your hosts. I am Mistress Pandora, but you can call me Pan.
And I am Beth.
I almost feel like we could like just record us introducing ourselves one time, because I feel like I have the same inflection every time.
Me too. Just like we do our little, our other, you know, our intro and our outro and stuff.
Right, just
recorded every time.
Plop it all in there, you know, whatever. So this week we are discussing episode 707, A Practical Guide for Time Travelers. So this is your last spoiler warning. If you don't want to be spoiled for 707 or anything before that, or potentially after that, like if you don't want to be spoiled, you should probably come back to us later.
Yes.
If you're cool with spoilers, keep on trucking.
We mean like later, like as in after you've like read the entire series, because we jump around.
Yes. But as we have discussed, some of the shit we spoil doesn't actually happen, won't happen, mm-hmm. hasn't happened, but we don't tell you that. So it's anybody's guess. It's still a surprise. And that's our strategy.
Maybe I'll try to make something up in the middle of this episode.
There we go. Maybe something on the fly will come up.
Who knows? I don't know how good my brain is working right now, so we'll see.
That's fair. So, well, we finally got to the freaking Battle of Saratoga. One of them. I honestly, about halfway into this episode, I wasn't sure we were actually going to get there. I'm looking at the clock going, there's no freaking way. We're still not going to get to this fucking battle. What in the hell? But they did.
The war is coming.
It was so short, though. It was almost anticlimactic how short the battle was.
Oh, God. Yeah.
We have to talk about William, though.
Yes, so much about William. And a good note for our poor dear William. When he, like, sliced that apple in the air, I was like, that is so Jaime. Like, You know, when he was, like, 23, like, first met Claire and was, like, you know, like, spinning the sword on his finger, or, like, when he was, you know, would fight Murtaugh, like, practicing and stuff. Like, it was just so... So, Jaime, there's a plane going by. Sorry. I live near an Air Force base, actually. So every once in a while, you know.
A flight comes in or goes out, and then we have guest stars. Yes, that was very, very Jaime. It also completely reminded me of John showing off for Percy in Brotherhood of the Blade.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. You're right.
But on a serious note, I need to know how many takes that took Charles. I gotta know.
I mean, was it like AI or like CGI or whatever? Like, I don't, you know, because that was pretty damn good.
It was pretty damn good. And I would hope that it's not, because that would just kind of break my heart if they faked it. Unless, you know, it had been, like, hours and, like, all right, fuck this. This apple ain't cutting.
Well, I mean, are the swords they use actually sharp? I don't know.
I mean, they'll have different kinds. So, like, It depends on what they're doing with it. And in that situation, he wasn't hacking at anybody. So they could have made it sharp enough to cut an apple.
True. Yeah, and I was kind of surprised. I don't know why I was surprised, but it was interesting to me that when the battle started and, well, when William finally started charging like a fucking Highland warrior.
He did that.
We'll get back to that. He had a sword. And like, I don't know if that's just like an officer thing or what, but he had a sword while the others had like, a lot of them had like muskets and stuff.
Yeah, that's an officer thing. The sword allows them, so if they're on horseback or at the front of a charge, it shines off, the sunlight shines off of it. It makes it easier for them to rally their troops to them to regroup.
That makes sense.
Random shit I didn't know was going to come out of my mouth today, but hey.
Oh, yeah. So the Highland charge, I was just like, holy shit. like, oh, they're doing the parallels so well.
They did. They really did.
Yeah, and especially because the last episode when Claire was telling Jamie about William, she was like, he has the heart of a, you know, Highlander too, and like, mm-hmm. then they show him like, wah! It's very nice. I was very satisfied.
That entire kind of arc with William was very, very well done. I have to give Stars kudos for this, and I know I don't do that very often. But the apple thing, at first I was kind of laughing at it. I'm like, that's so funny. That's really silly. What's he doing being such a kid? But then the friend that he's showing off for gets, you know, shot dead between the eyes immediately as soon as this battle starts. And it took William a very long time to like get his shit together.
Yeah.
Which is completely understandable, but the way they framed it, blocked it, and paced it, it was very much like what was left of the boy that he was died on the field.
Yeah.
And then he spends the rest of the episode mourning that. And it was just very well done. And it was sad. And it made me want to hug the poor kid.
I know. I always want to give William a hug. He needs lots of hugs.
He needs lots and lots of hugs. I really liked the way that they spent time building up that relationship between him and General Simon Fraser.
Yeah. No, that was really good. It was interesting. One thing on the, basically we're looking at like kind of the loss of innocence, right? So
yeah.
William had killed that guy a few episodes back, and it was his first time he'd killed anybody. He was kind of surprised that he was kind of like having mixed feelings about it. But even that, I think, because he was protecting people, you know, it didn't hit him as much that he had, it didn't take away his, you know, boyhood, innocence, whatever, completely.
Right.
But when he stood there and saw his friend just there 1 second and gone the next, I think part of why it took him so long to get up was not just that he was mourning his friend, but that, like you said, he was mourning that part of him that's gone. And then he charges like a Highland warrior into the battle. Like, it takes him a little bit to get there, but like, then he's like, okay, this is life, you know, and just goes for it.
When he got through the shock of it. Because he didn't have time to be shocked when he killed that guy in self-defense, because it was self-defense.
Yeah.
Like, he did not have a moment, because it was instantaneous, him or me. But then on the battlefield, because of that style of fighting and the weapons that they're using, it's not like that.
Yeah, and it reminded me so much, and I know you made a note about this too, of the way Jamie described Creef, his first battle,
mm-hmm.
and the way, like, you know, the bullets just start to come at you like out of nowhere. And it's just like, you know, I can only imagine how shocking that is for the first time. Especially when you're young and kind of have these, you know, dreamy ideals about, you know, war and the glory of it all. It's something you can't ever prepare yourself for.
Exactly. It doesn't matter how well you're trained or how much you train or what technology there is, thinking of just modern warfare, it's still not the same thing.
Well, no, because whenever you're practicing, nobody's shooting at you.
Not for reals, no.
You know, it's like, wow, we've got to just add a big factor here.
It's a very big factor. And then the first shot kills the guy right next to you. You know, 2 feet to the right, it would have been him. Or left, or whichever direction it was.
Back to his relationship with General Simon Fraser, mm-hmm. I did really like that, the way they kind of built that up over the last, I think he talked to him in the previous episode too. So like they kind of briefly built that up a little.
Yeah, they introduced him.
Right, because, yeah. And I love the actor that plays General Simon Fraser. His name is Angus McFadden, and he was in the show Turn, Washington Spies, which I just love that show. And he played Robert Rogers, which is kind of funny because in the books, William actually has a run-in with Robert Rogers when he is lost on Long Island.
Serendipitous.
And he was the one that I think dragged William along to try to capture Nathan Hale.
Oh.
He was Robert Rogers is an interesting character in history. So I wish I had prepared something, but anyways, it's kind of off topic, but he was a Revolutionary War figure. But anyway, he's not playing him in this. He's playing General Simon Fraser, but he's such a good actor. And we also saw him recently. So he had played back in the 90s. He played Robert the Bruce in Braveheart. And we won't talk about Braveheart. But and a couple years ago, there was I think it was made for Netflix, or it's on Netflix, but there's a movie called Robert the Bruce. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I found it on Netflix right around the time when I was like, just like devouring Scottish history right. for last season. And I was like, oh my God, we have to watch this. And we did. It was a pretty good movie. It was like they tried to tell way too much history in like an hour and a half, but it was still a good movie and he was excellent in it. So anyways, that actor just hits all my little warm and fuzzy buttons because of the roles he plays. So I love him. That's all.
And I love him as a casting choice for Simon Fraser. I think he's doing a fantastic job. Like I said, I really like how they're taking the time to develop that relationship with him and William. It's kind of cool because like they don't really, I don't think it was like a big deal in the books, but that is technically family. Kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Way back
very,
there.
Very technical.
But the scene from the book where Jamie is watching General Fraser die.
Mm-hmm.
And William is just beside himself. I feel like that is going to make sense, having seen this interaction in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, we better get that scene.
We freaking had better.
But that won't be, I don't know when. So I'm trying to figure out what's going to happen here, because the second Battle of Saratoga isn't for like another month. And that's the one where I think that's the one where General Simon Fraser dies, but maybe not.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure it is. Yeah. According to the wiki summary for next episode, Jamie fights in the pivotal Second Battle of Saratoga.
I just Googled it quick. He saw many successes in battle, but his fatal day on the battlefield came on October 7th, 1777, when he was hit with a rifle at Second Saratoga, or the Battle of Bemis Heights.
There it is.
I just love when my favorite shows are like taking place near me.
It's cool, huh? The other thing that it's not really a parallel, but the other thing that this battle scene made me just die for is Lord John in the Battle of Crayfeld.
Yeah.
I would take back not all of the mean things, but a lot of the mean things that I have said about Stars if they would just make a fucking spinoff about Lord John.
I know. Oh, come on.
So there were a couple of sexy moments in this episode.
Yes.
The obvious one being Bran Roger. But that's actually not what I meant when I wrote that down. Which it was good and I want to talk about it. But actually what I was really referring to was Jamie talking nerdy about the typesetting in that book.
Oh, I loved that. Oh my God. It's 12 point font.
It's 12 point Caslin. The gutters are half what they should be. I'm like, oh my God. He has never said a more attractive line in the entire fucking series. I had an actual, like actual reaction to it. I'm like, oh man. Baby.
Do we have to talk about the pan boner scale?
Because I also complain about the gutters.
I don't even know what gutters are.
So, okay. Let's typesetting lesson. So the gutters are the space between the inside margin and the interior of the binding. So when you open up the book, so it's on the left-hand page, it's the right-hand margin. And on the right-hand page, it's the left-hand margin, it's the interior margin. And if they are not wide enough, that's when you have to like crack the spine.
Oh, yeah. I hate that.
Right. And nowadays, we're used to just cracking open a paperback and, you know, literally cracking the spine so that you can get in between and see, we can read between those gutters because they're always so fucking narrow to save paper and ink. But in the 18th century, after even before, like when books were handmade, when they were all handmade, it's time consuming and expensive. And the spine is delicate. It's like, it's strong. It's not going anywhere. I would argue that a lot of spines in the 18th century were probably stronger than most of the, you know, mass produced, mass market spines that we get on the bookshelves today.
Oh, sure. Handmade. Yeah.
Yeah. But also because they were so expensive to make and because that adhesive is not flexible, modern adhesive is flexible, that the adhesive that they used in the 18th century was not as flexible. So once it cracked, it cracked. And it ruined the binding. And so they did not open the books that way. So you needed the wider gutter. So if you ever look at an old book that hasn't really been opened very much, hasn't been read very much, a very old one, it's going to have very wide margins on the inside so that you didn't have to crack it.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. We're learning all sorts of things today.
I also Googled Caslin font just because.
Oh, yeah. Is it cool?
It's a serif font. It's actually very clear. So that's why I'm like, all right, I'm going to catch him in something. I'm going to catch him in a detail and I'm going to get to F you stars on something stupid. No, actually, damn it. They got this right too. Caslin font was invented in 1722, I think. It's what we now call a serif font. It's very, very clear, very easy to read. It takes boldface and italics nowadays very, very well. It has good even kerning between the letters. Like it was, it's just a good, solid, simple typeface. Benjamin Franklin apparently used it almost exclusively. The first copies of the Declaration of Independence were printed on Caslin font.
I need to see if I have this font, and I need to start using it.
You probably don't. Adobe has it now. There's going to be some variation to it, but if you Google it, you'll find something similar.
Yeah, I just Googled it quick, and I saw the first thing that popped up actually was Adobe Caslin. So
yeah, they probably own the license for it now. Anyway, yeah. Once he starts criticizing the gutters, man.
Talk dirty to me.
Seriously. I had a moment. It was fantastic.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that I did like that moment. Although, I have to say, I know a lot of people are very upset because Jamie and Claire only had like 4 minutes of screen time this entire episode.
They were so big mad.
And they were talking about font for, you know. Another beef I am having right now is that they keep making details up this season, and I've never noticed it so blatantly that like completely contradict like things that happened in earlier episodes. And of course, all of those things that happened in earlier episodes were things that were not in the books.
Right.
Like Claire's driving glasses.
Uh-huh. I knew that's where you were going.
Yeah. And Ian not being at the ridge when William visited. Like, And now this season, they're like, oh, remember? I'm going to tell you like 3 times that I met you at the ridge so that the audience will believe me. As soon as I saw Claire wear those glasses in season 3, I was like, well, not as soon as, probably the second time, because I hadn't read the books yet. And no, it's not season, is it season 3 or season 2?
Yeah, the 60s.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, what the hell are they going to do? Because there's this whole cute, and what else is cute is that Jamie needs them too. So they're both like 2 little old people going to get their glasses. But now, you know, Jamie had to have his glasses to make him look old in season 3. And now I'm like, Claire, you already needed glasses.
Right. She's so butthurt over him pointing out that she needs glasses. She's amputating people's limbs without glasses. Is that safe?
Well, and that's like, and that's my whole beef with the whole her wearing glasses in that like one episode in season 3, because then she like goes back to the past and suddenly she doesn't need them anymore. And like, I understand that they were like driving glasses, but I mean, she rides a horse.
Like, I think she's a little bit more space between her and the vehicle in front of her, though.
Yeah, true. But like, make it make sense. Come on.
Honestly, I think part of why the glasses situation bothers me so much is that I have always worn glasses and I have always needed them all of the time because I can't see shit without them.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to think of somebody needing glasses, but only kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, it's not an experience that I can relate to. It's totally a thing. It's a normal thing, probably more normal than whatever the hell's going on with my peepers, but I have a hard time relating to it because it's never been my experience.
I remember when I first got glasses, I knew I needed them, but like, I don't know, like nobody believed me or something. So then
same,
born in the '80s, you know, when I finally got them, I was like, holy shit. But then I was like, I was still pretty young. I was in like older elementary school or like early middle school or something. I can't remember. And then I remember I went to see a play as on a school trip, and I forgot my glasses because I was still getting used to wearing them, and like mm-hmm. I couldn't see anything because like once you like, you know, once you can see correctly, it feels like it's worse when they're off than it was before, you know. Anyway, childhood trauma moment.
It's tough being born in the 80s.
Oh god.
So back to the people being big mad about Jamie and Claire only having like 4 minutes they're talking about glasses and typesetting, which I was excited about.
I know, I love that.
I also saw people just so mad about Bree and Roger's sex scene existing.
Well, I'm not mad that it exists per se, but I really, 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 really didn't need it. Really, 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 really.
I actually kind of liked this one.
Oh, God, no, it was the worst one ever.
No.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
Jocasta's wedding.
Oh, I was just talking about Bree and Roger.
Oh, okay.
Love scenes, but... Yeah, I don't know. It may have been the worst one, but...
Yeah. I didn't think it was the worst one. I thought this song choice was a little jarring.
I forgot what... Oh, yeah. I was like...
Phil Collins.
Do not besmirch Phil Collins like that. What are you doing? It was just all wrong. All wrong. I couldn't. I felt like they were kind of trying to make it like... the scene where Jamie and Claire have sex like in A. Malcolm, like the second time when they're all like facing each other and all like, you know, just cover, like the covers are on and they're all just, yeah, I was like, ew, do not make a parallel between father and daughter sex scenes. You know what I mean?
I just thought it was really funny that there hasn't been a sex scene in just episodes and episodes. And it was Bree and Roger. I liked it. I thought that the intimacy coordinator did a good job with the framing and the blocking.
I agree on that. I just, you know, I just have feelings about Roger and Bree.
I have a question.
Yes.
Before we move on to the last thing. How in the world does Stars expect this prequel to be successful when their quote-unquote core fan base hates every character that's not Claymie and resents every moment of screen time that quote-unquote takes away from them?
Yeah, I think about that myself, like, you know, but I guess they're banking on, and I can see this, like, it's a different show. You're not expecting Claire and Jamie, so, like, there's just no expectation. It's just going to be a different story with different characters, right? So they're probably just banking on that kind of psychological concept or whatever.
I don't see that working with this particular audience.
I don't know.
I'm not going to watch it probably. But obviously I'm not the target audience.
See, I think they'll get a lot of people to start watching it, but they're going to have to give them a good hook to keep them there.
Yeah.
So whether that's like another couple with great chemistry or the intrigue is just that good, or you know what I mean? Like they're going to have to really, they can't just rest on the laurels of it being Outlander, except for bringing the audience in initially.
You know what else has great intrigue and exciting hooks?
The Lord John books.
The Lord John books.
Uh-huh. And they have sex.
Plenty of it.
Gay sex. The best kind.
The best kind. I'm not going to get into the Scottish prisoner. I promise.
Hold back, man. Hold back.
I've tried. I've got gigantic sausages and Punch and Judy in my head, and I got okay. Moving along.
The last topic that I put here is Rob Cameron is a 1980s villain. He's got those like handsome good looks, and you know, like the blue, I think his eyes are blue, but like the blue eyes, and just like he doesn't seem like he should be a guy that like wears a hard hat all day. Like he seems like he should be like in a mansion with a polo shirt on with like a popped collar and like, you know, drinking beers and, you know, date raping women, because like that's his look. It works because he is a villain, right? But it's like they really actually did a good job of kind of like transferring that like 1980s bad guy into him for the time period. I don't know if that was purposeful, but I see it.
That whole dinner, though, like everything about him being there is just so fucking shows up unannounced like that. Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah, that's just
no.
Even in the 80s, when people just showed up at your house, it was like after dinner. It wasn't like
right
for dinner, right? Like you after dinner time. Like people might stop by and like you'd have a little like Entenmann's cake or something, but like, right? But like,
I can taste this memory.
Like you always had to have an Entenmann's cake on hand, right? Just in case.
So dry.
But like, they didn't show up unannounced for dinner.
Right. What in the shit? At least Roger was properly appalled by that, but not nearly enough.
And then Roger just basically hands him the freaking
oh my god, I can't answers. Even defend, I can't even defend him on that one.
He has just been awful this season.
No, he's had his moments where I'm like, my bro, what? You're on your own, man. That was one of them. I actually yelled at the screen.
Hold on. First of all, he made the whole thing with Bree getting a job about him.
Yeah, but he got over it.
But he ruined... it doesn't matter that he got over it. Like, he took that moment for her and spoiled it. And then, oh, it's so nice of you to get over it after you've spoiled that moment. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't like that vibe. And then he befriends Rob, even though Rob was a total dick to his wife. And then he basically hands the paperwork and the kid over to Rob. Like, oh, sure, creepy guy that we hardly know that just randomly showed up for dinner. Like, sure, you can take our kid. Oh, God. Roger, no. You suck. Sorry. Like,
he'll get better, I guess.
He's just...
I got nothing right now. I know it's coming. But I got nothing right now.
So one other thing that we need to quickly talk about is that they have cast Jane. Well, they cast her a long time ago.
Oh.
Yes. Which I didn't, that like flew right under my radar.
Yeah.
But really? There had been like one of the like Brazil fan pages had mm-hmm. like found a post announcing who was playing her and stuff. And I am so pre-mad about this. I'm going to lose my shit. First of all, they've cast older Jane and young Jane.
Okay.
Second of all, they both have crazy, like, wild, curly red hair.
Okay.
Don't know where they're going with that, but I don't like it. Thirdly, she was filming, the young Jane was filming at Lallybroch. Like, what the fuck is up with that? I don't like any of it.
How does that work?
I don't like any of it. And I was thinking, like,
Are we sure it's Jane and not Joan?
No, it's Jane.
Okay.
Because young Jane, we already have young Joan. But no, it's definitely Jane. I don't like this one bit. Like, Jane was not a redhead. Nessie was a redhead.
Right.
So I'm like, are they like trying to converge these characters, or what do they have up their sleeve?
Oh, no way in hell are they doing that.
I know. I'm just trying to understand, because like, I don't get it. And they cast Jane, but I haven't heard anything about Fanny. So what's up with that? I don't like any of it. I am very suspicious of all of this.
Does that yet constitute an FU stars? Because we haven't had one this week.
It's a pre-FU.
Still on thin fucking ice. Got it.
Yeah. 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 I am just like, and of course we're not going to find out until it, you know, the back half of the season. So, which will be, you know, on sometime between fucking now and, you know, 2025 or some shit. Who knows? Yeah.
Some point. Anyway, so I'll say that I have my suspicions about how the story is going to play out. I don't generally worry about how they're casting, though, because they've really not missed on any of their casting decisions.
Oh, I'm not concerned about the casting. But I am concerned about the choice to have a redhead and to have them have a young Jane. And I just don't.
It's the filming at Lallybroch that has me confused as hell.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe they used it for something else. Like they recycled the set.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe.
And like I think Jane is younger than William by a year or two, I think. I can't remember exactly how old she is.
I don't remember.
So, I mean, which doesn't mean anything, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not very happy right now, and I'm going to remain that way until Stars proves otherwise.
That's fair. I support you.
Thank you.
The only other thing I wanted to mention about the episode was that cliffhanger at the end. I laughed.
Oh my God.
So hard. I just, because I'm a mean-spirited person sometimes. And I'm just thinking about people who haven't read the books and I guess don't know that Jamie lives through this.
Yeah, I know, right?
and then the preview for the mid-season finale did not give any indication that he was going to be okay.
No.
Exactly. It was awful. I loved it.
Just like when Roger punched Buck at the end of the last episode, and I'm like, nobody who hasn't read the books knows who that dude is.
I was mad about that just because they've been teasing Buck for so long, and then we didn't get any payoff on that last episode. I will say I like the casting choice for Buck now.
I do too, and I think he's doing a really good job with the character. Yeah. And they're obviously making him like less rough around the edges, which I think is fine for the show. You know, they've kind of softened the edges of a lot of characters. So I like him, and I feel like whoever's this, you know, who this guy is that's playing him, it's probably partially his acting choices too, and it just seems to make sense for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. So last thing is a bingo check-in. Did you cross anything off this week?
forgot to look, but I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to get anything else until
next year.
The second half of the season.
So I went ahead and crossed off Mama Bear Brianna, which I think you already had.
Yes, I crossed that off for something else. Yeah.
And I went ahead and claimed Roger Mack's Wild Ride because it has officially begun.
That's true. That's true. I will probably check it off next week. Oh, another thing that we just saw today, speaking of which, Lottie Verbeek, who plays Galus.
Yeah.
Her Instagram profile, she just updated it and it says Outlanders season 7 and 8.
Oh.
So I don't know what's going on with that either, but unlike with Jane, I'm intrigued.
My eye twitched. Could be unrelated.
So, yeah, I just be interesting to see where they're going with that. And it also makes me wonder, like, where this timeline is going.
Where are we going? And why are we in a handbasket?
Yes. Exactly. So that's all the gossip for this week.
That's the gossip. We should probably point out that there is not an episode next week.
Correct.
Outlander is on a... Yes, it'll be this week by the time people actually hear it. Or it could be last week, depending upon... Or a year ago. I don't know.
On...
The next Outlander episode airs on August 11th, 2023. So we will not record again until after that happens.
Correct.
So sorry you guys have to go a week without us.
I know they're going to be devastated.
They're going to be so sad.
All right. Well, I think we've beat this episode to death.
We did. I think we stayed on topic, actually. Kind of. Well, sort of.
I mean, I stayed topic adjacent for the most part because I went off a little bit, but it was about like Scottish people and about the Revolutionary War. So it still counts.
We didn't go talking about Mel Brooks this time. We did good.
No. I'll save that rant for another day. All right.
Well, thanks everyone for listening and we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Listening to this, it means you survived another episode of Lord Johnlander. We'd love to hear from you on Twitter or Tumblr at Lord Johnlander or on our website at lordjohnlander.wordpress.com/contact us. All opinions expressed on the Lord Johnlander podcast belong to us and are not affiliated with Outlander, Sony, Stars, and definitely 100% not with Diana Gabaldon. This podcast is not suitable for children, immature adults, homophobes, anyone who takes fandom seriously, people who don't understand that the characters aren't real, people with sticks up their arse, people who hate fun, and people who have no sense of humor. Do not try any of these hot takes at home. We are professionals. And if you know us in real life, no, you don't.